Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It is Monday, August 26th. This is The Rant. I'm Jeff. We got some preseason to talk about here. The preseason is officially over. Give you takes. I don't quite have 14 takes from 14 games, but we'll see how many we can get here. Not every game had starters. Not every game had relevant information. We'll do that. Get caught up on some emails and maybe, just maybe, a voicemail or two as well. Before I get into that, FTNFantasy.com. Hey, you can still get in there if you have drafts this weekend. Upcoming, a lot of drafts on Labor Day. Get on over there. You have some cheat sheets for you. Make your draft really easy. I hear this from so many people, like, yo, I started using the draft board and now I don't have to make decisions anymore. It just lays it out all very clearly. That was by design. That was definitely by design. I do not like having to make any decisions on draft day. So, well, you could be in that situation as well. FTNFantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. And if you get in now, you get it for the entire year if you get the annual subscription, which I don't know why anybody would want to do monthly. Just saying. You get a lot more savings with the annual, and you get it all year round. So FTNFantasy.com, go check it out. All right, let's get into these. Jacksonville and Atlanta. Atlanta arrested basically everybody. Jacksonville did not. They had starters out there. Trevor Lawrence was in. He threw two touchdowns in this game. Of course, both of them went to the guy who doesn't catch touchdowns, which is ironic. Evan Ingram doesn't change my outlook for this team. And I thought Lawrence looked pretty good. I actually ended up getting Lawrence in my Superflex over the weekend, the Farm League draft. If you want to see what that looks like too, I did put a video up on Twitter, just like a montage of some of the stuff from during the Farm League draft. So go check that out at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter. That's really all I have from that game. No major takeaways. Moving on to Miami and Tampa. Nothing really big on the Miami side, though. I will say that Jalen Wright is fourth on the depth chart based on his usage. He's behind Jeff Wilson. He didn't come in until the second. So I think there are going to be a lot of people who draft Jalen Wright, and then they're going to be very disappointed with his performance early in the season, and they're going to drop him. You know, I see this every single year with certain guys. Wright has that look this year, and it's not a knock on Wright. I mean, let's not forget, a lot of people dropped Devon Achane early last year because the usage wasn't quite there, and then that changed. So, you know, if you're just drafting any of these guys, my approach is to give them the benefit of the doubt, because chances are, hopefully, you drafted those players for a reason, whoever they are, whether they're guys you drafted in the early rounds or in the late rounds or anything in between. You drafted them for a reason. And if you didn't draft them for a reason, probably want a reason to draft players. Just going to toss that out there for the future. You know, something to work on in the future. But give these guys the benefit of the doubt. You're not going to be able to tell much of anything about what the season's going to look like after week two. People think they do. It's the annual victory, the September victory laps out there in fantasy football. But the reality is a lot is going to change over the course of the season. So just be aware of that if you're throwing a late round pick at Jalen Wright. Yet again, I thought the backfield looked pretty good for Tampa, at least the usage. Maybe the efficiency wasn't great in this one, but Rashad White got out there finally in the preseason. 4 for 16 and a touchdown on the ground. Caught a ball as well for 17 yards. So overall, on 5 touches, really, I'll take that. I'll take that all day long from Rashad White, who continues to be a good value. San Francisco and Vegas. I don't really have anything on the Vegas side. So San Francisco, I still get asked who the handcuff is to Christian McCaffrey. And people assume that it's Jordan Mason. And he did have a very nice game. 8 for 42 and a touchdown in this one. Continues to look rock solid. But the weird thing is McCaffrey obviously didn't play. We knew that was going to happen. Mitchell didn't play either. Elijah Mitchell didn't play. Now, he just got back into practice, so he may not be ready yet, or this could be an indication they're just saving him because he truly is the number two on the depth chart. We don't know. And there are situations where you may not know the handcuff heading into the year. And if you take a stab on the handcuff and it changes, like if you say, well, I'm gonna draft Jordan Mason, and then we realize it's Elijah Mitchell, hopefully you can then drop Jordan Mason and grab Elijah Mitchell, or vice versa. We don't quite know. We really don't quite know. Everything would indicate that it's Mitchell, but it is Kyle Shanahan, and he doesn't always tell us all the info. Carolina and Buffalo. On the Carolina side, we did see starters. Nothing on the Buffalo side here. But this is, it was our first look at Bryce Young this year, and he didn't look that bad. You know, and I know, and everybody knows this, and we just should just stop saying it. Yeah, it wasn't against the first string defense. Whatever. We know this. But if you went out and stunk it up against the second stringers, that would be even a bigger concern than him having to play decent against them. He did throw the touchdown pass, so you had that going, which was nice. That one went to, as we drew it up, Jordan Matthews. Where the heck did that come from? But anyway, yeah, that doesn't move the needle, but I thought that was overall pretty good. Lots of Deontay Johnson in this one. Good bit of Adam Thielen. You had Mingo out there and Xavier Legette. I think we're going to see eventually Legette leapfrog Mingo, but I do think Mingo starts the season out as the number three. Not fantasy viable. Pittsburgh and Detroit. Didn't see anybody from Detroit. So here's the question. Is Russell Wilson the starter? I do not think that Justin Fields did enough to take the job away from him in the preseason. All the reporting would suggest as much. And while Russ didn't play much, he did have a really nice completion to George Pickens. 26-yard completion. Helped set up a touchdown. I mean, also helps when Cordarrelle Patterson runs it in from 31 yards out. But still, you did have that in this one. I do think that Russ ultimately starts the season out as a starter. Does he keep the job? Another question entirely. Who knows? But as of now, that's what we're looking at. Green Bay and Baltimore, I have zero from this game. I mean, everybody rested of note on both sides. Rams and Houston. I actually have two things here. One of them actually is about a player who rested, which ordinarily I'd just move right on from. But they rested Jordan Whittington. So Whittington is definitely, obviously he's making this roster. But then beyond that, the question is there a pathway for him to get on the field? I like drafting him in best ball right now, but that's obviously a different type of game than redraft. I don't think he's draftable in redraft because it does look like, at least in the short term, DeMarcus Robinson is going to be the barrier because Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp are pretty much locked into their roles. And then DeMarcus Robinson emerged as the three down the stretch last year. Tutu Atwell will be on the team, but he's not really a barrier because he's not playing the same role as Whittington. So Whittington, if he's going to get on the field, either one of those guys has to get hurt or at some point he has to leapfrog DeMarcus Robinson, which could very well happen. Keep your eye on Whittington. He should be rostered in dynasty leagues, deeper dynasty leagues, mid-sized dynasty leagues potentially as well. But yeah, we'll keep our eye on him in redraft. On the other side, there is some speculation that we could see Dameon Pierce traded. It's not common right now for a trade to happen, but it's definitely not impossible. And if he does, Cam Akers would be the number two in that backfield. He actually really looked good in this game, which is funny because it was a revenge game, but maybe he's finally removed from the injury. He knows the system, even though he didn't play in the exact same system with the Rams. It's generally the same concepts as what Bobby Slowick is using here for the Texans. So that could very well happen. If that does happen, I mean, I'm not handcuffing Joe Mixon, so I don't see much value there, but I know obviously some people have been drafting Dameon Pierce, so Cam Akers would kind of slide into that range if that happened. It's still a big if, though. Minnesota and Philly, really almost nothing from this one, though I will say two things really quickly. First, Paris Campbell may not make this roster following the Jahan Dotson trade. Dotson did not play in this game. And we have no clue when TJ Hockenson is going to be on the field. He's likely to start the season out like on PUP. If he doesn't, then obviously that's great. But if he starts on PUP, that's a mandatory four-game absence. And then you may not be back in week five. Like it could take some time before you get back on the field. If you decide to draft TJ Hockenson, or we'll talk about it with Nick Chubb as well, just to put him on your IR spot, you're potentially missing out on the ability to use that IR spot strategically during the course of the season. So I'd be reluctant to do that. I've shied away from him. I have him. I had a good bit of him early in best ball because he was so cheap. He's still really cheap, but I throttled back on my best ball exposure. Looks like I'll end up at about a little over 10%, maybe at 11 or 12% exposed to him, which is fine. If I miss out on a good chunk of the season there, yeah, it sucks, but it's not the end of the world. All right, Chargers and Dallas, kind of got nothing here. Maybe the only thing is Brendan Rice, after starting last week, played in this one. They didn't play Josh Palmer, Ladd McConkey, DJ Chark, or Quentin Johnston. So Rice may be on the roster bubble because I think that last spot comes down to him or Simi Fehoko. And Fehoko had a long touchdown in this one. There are a couple big plays. Darius Davis had a 70-yard end around. The Fehoko play was 78 yards. So I don't know if Brendan Rice makes the roster. We'll see. We'll see. Moving on to Giants and Jets, and that's all I have. There was nothing in this game, absolutely nothing. None of the relevant players played whatsoever. All right, Cleveland and Seattle, one of the high-scoring games on this slate, 37-33. Seattle did play their starters. Geno Smith hooked up with DK for a touchdown. He also had a nice Kenny McIntosh 56-yard touchdown run. I think he makes the team as the number three. We'll see. But don't mind Kenny McIntosh. He's just a deep name to know. It's not going to be a fantasy viable name unless injuries ravage this backfield, which has happened in the past. On the other side, let's see. Probably the big takeaways. I mean, you had some scoring here. Tyler Huntley had three passing scores. Michael Woods got in the end zone twice as a receiver. Jamari Thrash got in the end zone. He actually looked pretty good in this one. He should make the roster. But the key here, Jerome Ford did play early. Then you had Deontay Foreman come in, and then he got hurt. No Pierre Strong because he's banged up. No Nick Chubb, obviously. Nyheim Hines and Nick Chubb expected to start the season on PUP. So the question is, what do we have from there? And what do we do with Chubb? What do we do with Jerome Ford? So Chubb, same advice as TJ Hockenson. We have no idea when Chubb's going to be back. No clue, man. None. It's really risky to take him. But I've been asked, like, well, if you know that he's going to be on PUP, then why are you lower on Jerome Ford? And part of it is a skill thing. Like, I'm not overly impressed by him. I wasn't overly impressed by him last year. There were times where a plodding Kareem Hunt was basically equaling him in productivity. And then also, it's the fact that I do think we're going to see a three-man backfield, like, provided Pierre Strong is okay. That would be, and Deontay Foreman for that matter. So it would be Ford, Foreman, and Strong making the roster and all three of them having a role on game day. So I'm not overly bullish there on Jerome Ford. And usually with those instances, like, I have the guy positioned in a spot where he's going to go earlier than where I have him on my board. So I don't even have to make the decision. Tennessee, New Orleans, nothing on the New Orleans side, but Tennessee, we did get most of the starters with the exception of DeAndre Hopkins. Tony Pollard was out there on the entire first drive. Then Spears came in on the second drive. Then we had Pollard come back in like a fourth down situation. It was a fourth and short. I don't think there's going to be any clearly defined roles. A lot of times when you have a backfield timeshare, there are clearly defined roles where one guy may be more of an early down guy, one may be more of a passing down back. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I just think they're both playing the same role, and maybe Pollard, quote, starts the game, but they both get about the same amount of reps. So it's just pick your poison. I would not do that thing that people do where they say, well, just drafted them both, locking the points in. Like, no, you're not. You're locking yourself into a weekly start sit dilemma. And I would rather just plant my flag on one of those dudes and then take it from there. And honestly, I don't care. I would take one or the other. Actually happened in my draft this weekend where the guy before me, I had Spears and Pollard as the top two on the board. He took Spears. I took Pollard. He said, would you have taken Spears if I took Pollard? And I said, yep. I was like, I didn't, whichever one you were taking, I was taking the other one. Like, pretty easy. All right. Arizona and Denver. The Cardinals didn't play anybody. The Broncos rested most of their players, but Audric Estime did play. Scored a touchdown, caught a 17-yard pass. So showed some, you know, he's a little nimble, even though he's not super athletic. He showed that on the reception. And I think ultimately he makes the roster. Samaje Perine doesn't. Now we'll see. We'll see what happens there. All right, finally, New England and Washington. Not much on the commander side. They pretty much rested anybody of note. Unfortunately, they rested all three slot receivers. So we have no clue who has the edge to be the starter along with McLaurin and De'Ami Brown. If you draft Luke McCaffrey, it's a dart throw. And if it doesn't hit, okay, fine. It doesn't hit. And then you cut him because you're not drafting him early. There's nothing wrong with missing on a 13th or 14th or whatever, or 15th or late round pick, you know? Over to the other side. So Drake May looked really good. Now, he wasn't perfect, but he made a throw on the move across his body. That flick of the wrist was beautiful. He ran, and I don't think people realize how fast he is, like how athletic he is. He had a very nice scramble. He overall looked like he could be a starter. I know, we all know, it wasn't against the first string. Fine. Jacoby Brissett was banged up, had a shoulder issue. However, Jerod Mayo, who is still yet to name the starter, called Drake May the second best quarterback on the roster. So it seems like May may not start in the beginning of the season. It's only a matter of time before he'll start. So no biggie there. If you draft him in Superflex, you wouldn't need him anyway because he'd be your third quarterback, hopefully. You wouldn't need him until after at least week five when the bye weeks start to kick in. And he could be starting by then. We'll see. We shall ultimately see. All right, so plenty of emails in the hopper here. So we're going to get to those, plus a voicemail after this. Okay, and we are back. The rantpodjr at gmail.com. Bari checking in, safe and upside quarterback with five bench spots. I would say I would not be going safe and upside with five bench spots. I know where the question's going already. Your bench is too thin. I would so much rather have as much firepower as I could at running back and wide receiver on my bench. And so that means I'll probably only go upside there if I'm in the late round. Hopefully I can get a value quarterback, but your bench spot just doesn't allow to roster two quarterbacks or two tight ends. Keeper related question from Dustin. He is in a keeper league where he is keeping Anthony Richardson in the 16th round. Could I briefly discuss how I value stacks? I don't value stacks in redraft leagues. And really you're talking about a pairing here. Like a true stack is when you have more than two players from a roster. So you would have Joe Burrow, Chase, and Higgins, something along those lines, and maybe even Gesicki or something like that. This is a pairing because he's talking about Michael Pittman. So with Michael Pittman, if it happens, it happens, but I'm not changing my rankings. He said, would it change how I rank Jonathan Taylor? No, but I'm just not going to draft Jonathan Taylor. It doesn't really change. I just probably will cross him off my board because I don't want that negative correlation. If I already have Richardson, I don't want to grab the running back of my primary quarterback. So that's how I'd approach that one. All right, moving on. Andrew, snake draft versus non-snake draft. So does that mean linear? I'm curious where he's going with this. He said he wants to start by saying how much he appreciates my content and honesty. Well, not everybody appreciates the honesty. He said you have the ability to cut through the noise and provide a realistic perspective without sugarcoating us with butterflies, cupcakes, and rainbows. Well, normally I'm shooting for lollipops and puppy dogs, but yeah, I appreciate you, Andrew. His question, does hero RB strategy still apply in a non-snake draft? So again, he didn't define what non-snake draft is. If it's linear is really only used in rookie drafts. That's where, like, if you have the first pick in the first round, you also have the first pick in the second and third and so on. You just stay, you don't snake around. My sense is he's probably talking more about auction, in which case, no, it wouldn't apply because in auction, the main goal is value, you know, trying to get as much value on your players as possible. Because if you get a player, let's say you have a guy at $30 and you get him at 27, 26, say you get him at 26, you have four extra dollars that you didn't think you were going to have based on that market value on that player. So that four extra dollars can be put to use elsewhere. So I wouldn't be worried about zero RB, hero RB, anything like that. It's just about getting values. AJ, starting two receivers versus three. I'm going to guess his question is, does your strategy change? Let's see. Two very similar leagues. They both have half point PPR scoring. One league starts two wide receivers. The other starts three. Would you prioritize drafting wide receiver in the three league? I wouldn't change my approach is the answer to this question. I'm still going to go in with the draft strategy. That strategy is meant to apply to a wide range of leagues. I can't say every single league because I know somebody's going to come in with some kind of crazy format. But generally speaking, any league that I've been playing in, I use these strategies. And those strategies, of course, are in the game plan draft guide over at ftmfantasy.com in the roadmap article. I break down all the strategies and then how I actually use them. Joseph, exposure is his question. He said he drafted around 16 teams, won over 40% of his leagues. Nice. Over or exactly. Did you win four of the 16 or did you win five? Anyway, he said he's drafted about 15 teams this year and has about 15 more to go. I guess this is a best ball question. His issue, he's worried about exposure to certain players who keep falling to him. Is there any advice on how you can limit exposure? It's easy, just pay attention to exposure and then just don't draft those players. He said he doesn't want to lose value. Well, it's not value if you're overexposed to them. So what I do, like, DraftKings doesn't make it easy on you. If you're playing on DraftKings, you have to track your own exposure. But anytime I make a pick, I just go into this little spreadsheet that I made. And if you're even moderately handy in Excel/Google Sheets, you can make one for yourself. If not, I mean, I guess you could do it by hand. It's more of a pain in the ass that way, but you could do it. Now, as far as Underdog is concerned, they do it for you. You just open up, you can see what you're exposed to on particular players. So usually I'll, you know, like once a day, I kind of go in there because I'm doing a bunch of slow drafts and every day a couple more of them end and then my exposures change. But if I do see that I'm overexposed to any player, like if for a little while there, I was up over 30% on a few guys and I did not want to be above 30% for sure. I really don't even want to be above 25%. And so those guys were just on my little list of I'm not taking these guys if I have the opportunity today. So it's really something you just have to pay close attention to as you're going through each one of your drafts. Chucker, roster construction. He's in a 12-person league. It's a keeper. His keepers are McBride and Kyren. He said he's going into this draft with Kyren as an anchor, so he's going to go after wide receiver. He said, typically, how many running backs should you end up with on your team? Well, if he said he's going to handcuff, so then I would want five. I would want five running backs if I'm handcuffing because he said he's going to take Kyren. So I would definitely want five. And I don't want five with like two of them coming in the super, super late rounds. I want to hit them in that 0/hero RB range. And, you know, if I'm cuffing, it's five. If I'm not cuffing, it's four. Because I know invariably those running backs, I just talked about it with Jalen Wright, those running backs you take in the late rounds, a lot of people are dropping them. You know, they drop them early in the season. So that's going to be the key for me there. I have noticed a lot of people who've been showing me their draft boards in the FTN Discord, which, by the way, for people wondering, I did put the coleslaw recipe in the FTN Discord on Saturday. It's there. I actually had some dude who's like, yo, I subscribed just for that. I'm like, well, I mean, it is very good. So to each their own, but you also get a lot of other cool stuff with the subscription. Anyway, I noticed that a lot of people are abandoning the strategy in that 7-10 range. So let's say you go zero RB. What I am seeing people do is they're going like running back in 7 and 8 and then wide receiver in 9. And it's like, ooh, that's volatile. Even if you go hero, and I am seeing people like go RB in 7, wide receiver in 8. It's like, oof, you're really like, I understand the idea that you're sacrificing value. Like the one pick was Calvin Ridley, which is fine, but it's about roster construction. It is not about value. Like if you're a value-based drafter, then it's about value. But if you're doing the strategies that I put out there and you're trying to really execute them, it is not about value anymore. Like it's about value at the position that you're looking at in a particular range, but it's not about overall value. It's really hard for a lot of people to divorce themselves of that. Like early on in drafts, like people keep saying, well, if you drafted an anchor in round 1 and then so-and-so fell to round 4, wouldn't you take them as a value? And it's like, no, because they're a round 7 value for me. So no, they are not a value. And it's really hard for a lot of people to grasp that one because it is a dramatic departure from the way that a lot of people have drafted really forever. Jason said, worst draft ever. Wrapped up his live draft and he has to apologize for not believing me this summer. Well, I'm used to that. You don't have to apologize. After round 6, someone looked at his board and said 5 wide receivers in the first 6 rounds. Worst idea ever. And it was then he realized all the characters from the show are real. Yeah, there are a few characters, that's for sure. Angry fantasy guy, fantasy know-it-all. So I guess he's talking about a fantasy know-it-all. He said after a quick inventory of his basement, he found a few fantasy know-it-alls, an angry fantasy guy who also happened to be wearing cargo shorts, a draft guide printed on April 4th. Oh, printed in April. Four people on auto draft. Three people had plans fall apart after the first three rounds. And he counted six, you sniped me. Four, who's up? Three, he's already taken. We say shot in my leagues. And then seven mentions of trading players who were just drafted. It's true. You'd think I've done this before. Anyway, he said ESPN gave him a grade of C, and he couldn't be happier. Well, yeah, the grades, by the way, to anybody out there, who cares? Seriously, who cares? I got a C in my ESPN draft from ESPN, and then Fantasy Pros gave me a 93 out of 100. So who cares, honestly? Got an A in one place and a C in another. LaDon checking in. Said he used the strategy this year, went with the punt RB2. We are also just calling that hero RB now. I'll just embrace the common term. He said, went with McCaffrey at number two. Landed DJ Moore, Michael Pittman, Devontae Smith, and DK Metcalf. Nice. Very nice. Who he traded. You already traded a dude? That's your first problem. He traded a guy for Derrick Henry. He traded DK Metcalf for Derrick Henry. So you just went against the strategy. So you technically now are not hero RB. You went robust RB. Because if you're trading before the season started, like, that's still basically your draft. He is happy though. All right, well, go for it. And just enjoy. He said, should he look to do this strategy again? I mean, that ultimately comes down to you. I think that everybody should try and, like, at least make a few notes of how you think your drafts went. What'd you do right? What'd you do wrong? And then that'll give you something to focus on as we go through the season. And then when the end of the year rolls around, whether it's December or if you make it to the championship in January, do another quick evaluation. Like, here's what I thought I did right this year. Here's what I thought I did right in the draft ended up being wrong, or vice versa. Here are the moves that I think were very effective. Here's where I made mistakes. All of that, be evaluating. And then you can determine whether or not hero RB works for you. It doesn't work for everybody, you know? Doesn't work for everybody. Works for me. Maurice, he's got a McBride trade. You guys trading before the season, man. You guys trading. We don't even know what's going to happen yet. But anyway, he goes, longtime listener since the PFF days. Appreciate that. In his main league, he ended up with Mostert as his RB2 and then Dobbins. I hope Dobbins is not the third running back he drafted, but all right. He's got McBride. He said he just got offered McBride and Dobbins for Alvin Kamara and David Njoku. It's very much trading to trade. You were downgrading at tight end and fairly sizably, I would add. And then you're upgrading at running back, but you're only upgrading into the RB2 range. I mean, how I would play this situation is I drafted the team for a reason. I'm staying put. I know that annoys people in some of my home leagues when they want to make trades all the time, but I'm only trading for one reason in redraft, and it's to make my teams better. I don't think that makes you better. It doesn't really make you worse, but it doesn't make you better. Brant said he loves the podcast. Appreciate that. Appreciate that, man. He said he would love my take on some of the things that happened in his draft this weekend. He went hero RB, Bijan, Devontae, DJ Moore, Olave, Mark Andrews, George Pickens. He had Devin Singletary as a keeper in round 11. Nice. Wanted to get two more running backs plus Algier. First question, with a cuff, do you want five? Yeah, I just talked about that. Five running backs. He went with that approach, ended up with Spears and Zeke. Not terrible. Not terrible at all. Second question, high floor wide receiver options fall all the way down the board to the end of the draft. Said, don't know how you feel about taking Tyler Lockett versus a late round target that offered more upside. I don't really love taking Tyler Lockett, I'll be honest. And I have him positioned where somebody else usually takes him. So I would rather get bang for my buck later on. I mean, it's fine, but usually somebody else takes him. If he falls at the end of the draft, though, he's not in a void for me. So I guess it is fine. I mean, you get good value on him. Quarterbacks, am I avoiding? Here's the third question. Am I avoiding stacking? No, I'm not avoiding, but I'm not prioritizing. He said he went with Lawrence over Caleb Williams. I would have went with Caleb Williams because he had DJ Moore. Yeah, if stack happens, or, well, a pairing happens, then that's fine. It's just not something I'm going out of my way to do. However, he did say he drafted Stafford over Cousins because he had Bijan. That I don't mind because I'm not necessarily trying to pair the running back with the quarterback. I'd rather have the wide receiver if I was going to. But again, it's not something I'm going out of my way to do in any sort of redraft format. All right, EJ is following up on a previous email. How would I allocate budget percentages when constructing a hero RB approach? See, this is an auction question. And again, I'm not going with that approach in auction. I am just going straightforward. My market values, when the auction starts, you get a sense of whether or not people are going to spend. And if they spend a lot, it's going to happen early and they're going to go overpriced. Sometimes what happens though is people feel each other out early in the auction and you can pounce and get top tier players on market value. It doesn't always happen that way, but it can. If that's the case, then I pounce. If not, I sit back because I let them spend and spend and spend, and eventually they can't spend as much as they were spending, and then I can swoop in and get really good values. So I would not take that approach. I would not use a snake draft strategy in an auction draft league, if that makes sense right there. All right, let's go over to a voicemail or two. Here's the first one.
All right, let's do this again. The rat, let's go. I failed to mention, I'm an IPA lover as well. I agree with your take. You shouldn't be drinking IPAs during the draft. We got to stay focused, brother. But I'm drinking IPA right now, and I'm going to give one that's a great one. Revision. Out of Auburn, California. Dr. LaPoulin. Triple IPA, the best. Anyway, let's move on. I failed to mention in my last voicemail, I have Kyren Williams. He's free. Got him off waivers. He's a keeper. I lose a 17th round pick. I'm picking from the 8th spot. It's a two-keeper league. A lot of guys are gone. I'm looking at Justin Jefferson or A.J. Brown. Guaranteed. One of those two. Should I go running back next, or if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, should I go him and double up and have two stacked wide receivers? Part of me wants A-Chain. It's an early reach, I know. But if I had Kyren Williams and A-Chain and Jefferson, what do you think about that? Love to hear value you, brother. Yes, let's go. Giddy up.
Yeah, it sounds like those IPAs were hitting. Let's acknowledge the first thing. I am not the rat. Don't let Wikipedia fool you. So if you look up on Wikipedia, Jeff Ratcliffe, the lacrosse player's nickname was the rat. That was not my nickname. I've been Jeff. Usually that's pretty much, I'm a basic bro. That's pretty much my nickname. I have been JR. I guess that one works, but usually just Jeff. For a brief moment in time in high school, it was Cliff for just a moment, like ninth grade basketball. And then that went away, but not the rat. Definitely not the rat. Definitely not rat. Anything like that. So anyway, you answer your own question. If you're keeping Kyren Williams, then you have an anchor. So therefore it would be wide receivers. You said you want to reach on Achan. Well, that's tough. Like if you're not valuing a player in a certain spot and you're reaching for him, you're overpaying for him, which is not something I'm willing to do. But you know, if I had Kyren Williams, then I am not going after a running back in round two. I already accomplished the goal of an anchor and then I'm going to take it from there. So that's how I roll with that one. All right, here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Jeff. Love the show. FTM subscriber. Just quick question. Wondering how you go about with an auction draft with keepers involved. Do you change your approach at all with the values? If some of the other players in the league get good values as keepers and you're not keeping anybody, do the values of the available players increase or anything like that? Or do you try to keep everything the same? Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, no problem. That is a good question, and it is important. So my auction spreadsheet that I built that I use during any auction draft actually has dynamic values. So this is what I keep talking about. Like, say you have a whole bunch of the guys go for more than what they should. So like each of the top guys goes for $5 to $10 more than they should. If that happens over a span of time, like you get 10 players who go $10 more than they should, which is an exaggeration, but it's a round number. That means that there's $100 less available to be spent in that draft. So therefore, you don't have to pay as much for each of your guys as you initially anticipated because they're getting priced up. So my spreadsheet will actually lower the values, but it does work the other way around. So yeah, if let's say you have a market value on a player of $35, but you're keeping him at $15, that means there's 20 extra dollars that still can be spent that you didn't anticipate based on your market values. So yes, that dynamically has to change, and then your market values would increase. Now, it's not like it's every player is going to increase by $50. No, everybody increases by like a dollar. You know, by the end of this auction that I just had, everybody had reduced because of the crazy spending in the beginning by about $2 to $3. That's it. But that dynamically happened over the course of the draft. So yeah, you have to have some spreadsheet ability. I think you probably could Google like auction, fantasy football auction cheat sheet or spreadsheet. And I'm sure people out there on Reddit or whatever have had, you know, put some Google Sheets together. Mine is not publicly available. It's just my own sheet. And it's not something we this year could turn into any sort of tool. Who knows? Long term, I'd love to have something like that on FTN. But as of right now, that's not in the immediate plans at all. All right. If you want to call in, and I appreciate the calls today, love hearing from you guys for sure. But the phone number 215-720-1708. And the email is therantpodjr@gmail.com. Again, I did put up a montage video. It was on my Instagram. I think the story's probably gone by this point, but it is on Twitter. So you can go scroll my Twitter and you'll see videos of the farm draft if you are interested. The brisket turned out amazing, man. And the coleslaw was delicious and everything was awesome. It was just such a good time. All together, epic. Otherwise, you know, follow along with me on both those spots at Jeff Ratcliffe. This week is going to be a little unique because I'm off on Friday, so we'll try and get four in. However, I have to make an appearance on the FTN podcast as well, the FTN Fantasy podcast in the middle of the week. But I'll keep you posted. I'm definitely back tomorrow, though, for another podcast, so keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. Catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.